Good evening. Is this Renee Hildebrand?
Hey, Dan. Yes, it is. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, and welcome to the show. How is Korea?
Korea's freezing. It is so cold and such crazy wind. It is not a place for a Florida girl to hang out.
Yes, must be quite a change from the sort of very summer sporting environment to what is obviously a winter sporting environment, being the Winter Olympics.
Absolutely. I already said there's a few things I like better about inline, starting with the climate.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so let's just get right into it, I suppose. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into the sport of inline skating? How did you become involved at first?
Well, I was in the United States, we have skating rinks where you go to hang out with your friends, and I was what you call a rink rat. I hung out at the skating rink during almost every session. I was there anytime the doors open, so I became a pretty decent skater. And then when I was about 16, they opened a brand new skating rink in town, and then there were a couple of kids that came from Florida, actually. I was living in South Carolina at the time. But when these kids from Florida came, they had speed skates, and we were still on quads at the time. But in a couple of months, we all got speed skates, and we were all skating on a speed team, and that's kind of how I started out.
Wow. Okay, and did you yourself taste a lot of success at a high level in the sport of speed skating?
No, actually, not really. I started kind of late. It was about 16 before I started competing, and back then it was even way more competitive than it is now. There would be 9 or 10 heats of senior men, where now we might have, you know, 3 or 4 at a competition.
Oh, wow.
So it was competitive, and a lot of kids have been skating all their lives, but I seem to always be one of the older ones skating, and I've always enjoyed coaching. I had already coached D-ball and basketball at the time, and just kind of naturally got into helping the younger kids. And after, let's see, in 1982, I went to the national championships in a relay, and then after that, I pretty much started coaching, helping out for a while, and then having my own team, I started in 1987.
Wow. Okay, so you've been coaching now for like a good 30 years.
Yes.
Oh, that's excellent. So, yeah, I guess tell us a bit about the process of coaching inline skating, spotting talent, developing it, and how that all works.
I didn't hear the last part.
Oh, yeah, just a little bit about the process of developing a skater from spotting talent to developing it, getting them into clubs, equipment, and then eventually, of course, making them elite skaters and hopefully world champions.
Well, it doesn't take long to figure out when you look at, you know, kids, if they are going to be mostly interested. I can make a champion out of most kids that are interested enough in it and show up enough to participate. But you will notice, you know, you will pick out the ones with that natural ability. I mean, both Joey and Brittany, I knew pretty early on that, you know, they had a great start. They, you know, really loved it. They showed up for practice and gave 100%. You can recognize that early. The challenge is to keep a skater or any athlete interested and motivated enough to stay in a sport long enough to develop into their potential. So many kids over the years that I thought, you know, were going to do real well just didn't keep skating. You know, they just, the attrition rate is, you know, really high in every sport. In our country, they say the average kid will stay in something about 3 years at the most. Well, in 3 years, you can develop a good indoor skater and an okay outdoor skater, but it's going to take you 5, 6, 7 years to really start winning at a high level. To make the world team, to get on the podium at the world championships. You're not going to do that overnight. I think most of my success is from keeping the kids motivated. And of course, the more successful you are along the way is motivating. If they're successful at a young age, most of them will continue. And if they keep getting better, that's motivating. So you want to make sure that your program is such that every year they show some improvement. I remember back when those kids were young, you know, we'd go to outdoor nationals, and every year they might only take off two or three fractions of a second of their times, but they always improved. Every year they went, there was improvement. So mm-hmm. I think athletes have to be able to look back and you know, realize that they are making some kind of progress, no matter how small it might be.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, the training environment itself is also very important. If a young skater is surrounded by other successful skaters who have been through this process, surely that also helps with the motivation. Because when you're having those days,
you think
you're not getting anywhere.
It's like in most sports, you don't get to practice with the people at the top of the sport. But in this sport, it's kind of nice because you can be at a practice, and you know the top skaters might be there, and or you go to a competition and all the inliners are there. So you get to watch the kids at the top. And the practice atmosphere is very important in the intensity of the practice. Joey mentioned to me at trials last month in Wisconsin that he never realized just how important it was to have a good coach and have a good team and a good atmosphere to train in until he's been in a situation where that hasn't happened. And then he realized kind of what he grew up in. You know, he says the same thing, that it was motivating because every practice, you know, was like competition. Like in my practices, even when the European kids used to come over, and when all you guys came over, I mean, we'd have practice champion, you know, they do every single start, every single race, nobody was going to let the other person win. And part of my success as my kids got so fast is to try to bring skaters from other parts of the country over to give them some international experience. I mean, to show them that, you know, everyone doesn't skate alike like we do in the indoor program in the U.S. Because I think for our country, that's probably one of the hardest things, is that even though the indoor program is good for skating, it's also, in a way, detrimental to our outdoor program, because a lot of kids have success in indoor, and it's just too hard to work to go outdoor, and it's just a whole different a whole different commitment to start doing an outdoor training program. The distances are much longer and the training is much more difficult.
Yeah. That it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I mean, here you're transitioning between two basically the same sports, but different formats, different distances racing. Do you think there are similar challenges with bringing a skater from exclusively an indoor skater to being also an outdoor skater, as there are to bringing an inliner over to, say, ice skating?
Yeah, I think it's similar. I mean, because definitely there's a little bit different technique. You know, you have to learn a different way to skate. Primarily, it's more difficult, and that's what most of my skaters have said about ice, because my biggest thing when they started was that I didn't feel like they spent enough time on their skates. They did a lot of off skates, but not too much ice time. And as Joey and Brittany have explained that to me, and Aaron more recently, that it just really takes a toll on your legs, because there's no forgiveness on the ice. We're on the inlines, we could stand up and roll around and relax our muscles. On the ice, Aaron said to me, you can't even rest when you're gliding. Like, you still have to be careful, you know, and keep yourself on your edges and, you know, and not fall off or fall down. So,
yeah.
You know, I think it's definitely more technical than inline. I think, like I said, it's a little more forgiving on the inlines. Like, if you make a mistake, you can still be fast and you can still, maybe win a race. Whereas on ice, if you make a technical error, your times are going to reflect that and you're going to be way down in the standings. I'm super proud of Joey for finishing eighth the other night, but obviously that wasn't what he expected or wanted. And one of his comments was he just didn't feel the ice too well the other night. And it's hard for me to understand that because, you know, I don't skate, but I think the inline kids still don't feel as natural as they did on their inlines. And it's tough to come from a sport that you dominated and could almost do anything you wanted, you know, during a race and still win. Whereas on ice, you can win a world, you know, you got a world medal, but at the same time, you step on the ice the next time and it just doesn't feel as comfortable as you would like it to.
Yeah, there's an immense psychological pressure. You almost have to put together a perfect race to have any chance at a medal at the Olympics.
Right, absolutely. And I mean, you know, I know Brittany's, she's heartbroken over her fourth place, but she skated amazing after all she's been through. And it doesn't matter how much you say to her, it doesn't matter. I mean, they're here to win a medal. And I can't fault them for that, because I've never taken them to the world championship just to be on the team. You know, we've always gone there to try to win medals. And I think too many people in our country and other countries, you know, just accept, oh, I'm going to make the world team. And that's not a big deal anymore in the U.S. because we're struggling to get on the podium at Worlds with no Vesmaco coated tracks in our country and the lack of interest in the outdoor programs. We're not doing what we should be doing at the world level. And I've been the coach the last 3 years, you know, the official team coach, and we haven't really even gotten the kids together enough to train together before we go. And we just have a lot of issues here financially and with just the membership numbers with inline. And so as well as we've done having the kids switch over from the inlines to the ice, we've also, when you look at who's here, it's the ones who are already at the top of their game on inlines. They were multi-time world champions or world medalists before they ever put on the ice. So I don't think you're going to see the same result if you just take inliners who just happen to be inliners and switch them to the ice and expect them to automatically be great. We've got a couple juniors that are doing excellent, but they've also done really well on inlines and almost got on the podium at Worlds. So I think it's our top athletes, you know, that are making it. And part of it is just that they have that mindset of being a top athlete. So they're already, you know, pretty tough and they know what it takes and the dedication. Because, I mean, we see that with Bart and Alexis and Lola Brigada, all the other inliners that have switched over. You know, they might not be getting on the podium, but, you know, they're out there doing a pretty good job for against people that have been on those same skates all their lives.
Yeah, definitely. There's been a bit of criticism, or I've heard a bit of criticism, that in many countries, the ice skating is starting to suck out the really good skaters from the inline world. And it's creating a bit of an antagonistic sort of view of, oh, ice or inline. Well, first of all, what do you think about that? And also, do you believe that maybe skaters should consider doing both sports simultaneously? I know some of the European skaters do, Bard, Alexi, for example. But what are your views on that?
Ideally, I would like to see them, you know, do that, to be able to do both sports. Mm-hmm. In the past years, we've had the same thing happen in our sport. We've had programs that were supposed to, you know, have kids go from wheels to ice, but at the same time, they were supposed to continue to compete on inlines. It's hard to force those kind of things. Once they get on the ice, there had been in the past, the coaches urged them not to go back to inline. I think now they're realizing how important it.
Hello? Sorry, we've... Renee, the line seems to have just cut out temporarily there.
Can you... You're still there? I have this emergency alert that goes off all the time.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I'm not sure where I was, but basically, I think that if we could get them where they could train, you know, in the off season on the inlines and then on ice season in the ice, I think it would make them all stronger. I think they're definitely sucking the top of our sport out, but in our sport, there's really no comparison when we have to pay our own way to Worlds. Our skaters have to pretty much handle all the finances involved in their skating unless they have a sponsor that helps out. At least with other countries, you get your way paid to the World Championships and, you know, get some, I know not all countries, but some. And so that's, once they get over to the ice and they're not having, you know, especially with parents that aren't having to pay for their child to go to the World Championships, and maybe they make the world team and get to go to the World Cups and U.S. speed skating pays for it, well, then they're going to be like, well, this is just better to stay in this sport.
Yeah.
And you don't see the crossing back and forth. I think you could do it and be successful with it, but then again, my passion is inline skating, and I don't want to lose my skaters all to the ice.
Yeah, that's understandable.
I know Aaron plans to come back and skate inline championships this year, but I'm not sure, you know, if that plan will carry out. I'm hoping it will.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
But I mean, Erin's an extraordinary athlete. She was skating roller derby as recently as a few months before doing ice. To switch between sports.
She skated the world championship too.
Yeah. To be able to switch sports like that is kind of insane, actually.
Yeah, it's really amazing. I think it's because she is so analytical that she can understand a lot about the biomechanics and she's able to, you know, be able to put that into work. But because that's the only explanation for how quickly she got over on the ice. It wasn't just a feeling. She had to have understood it better maybe than the others. I mean, she has an engineering degree, so that's just her analytical way of thinking.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, she's a smart one for sure. Yeah, coming back to that, these individual athletes, Joey, Brittany, Aaron, you've got three athletes on the US speed skating team. They're from the same region. Is it something about the region, or is there a particularly competitive group of people that just encourages good skaters to, take it to that level? What exactly is it that makes these three so exceptional?
Well, I mean, we always had a strong program on inline in Ocala, and our league is very competitive. The kids grew up skating in the South Florida Speed League, which is, a very tough league, and our region is hard. So basically, if you made it out of our region, you were pretty sure you'd be an indoor national champion. I also started taking them to international events when they were young. Like, we didn't wait until they made the world team to get international experience. I took Joey and Brittany to Colombia. During their time, we traveled to Belgium, Colombia, over to France for the Trois Pistes. We did get some international experience, whereas nowadays a lot of kids make the world team and they've never been out of the country and they've never participated in that style of race except for trials. Our trials is like the first elimination and points race. They skate the whole season, and at Worlds is the second one.
Oh my.
So there's a big problem in that when you have the Europeans and the Colombians skating those type of races every weekend.
Yep.
And plus on the best Mako coated tracks, and we have none. So we spend the first week or so getting ready for that. But I think with that group, it was before the best Mako tracks, and Aaron has, been here while the best Mako has been introduced. But I think when Joey and Brittany skated, I mean, at that point, we were just kind of outworking everybody. My young kids worked really hard. I've had people in the past kind of criticize me for working younger kids too hard, but I've never had any sickness, injury, anything that would lead me to believe that they couldn't handle it. The kids that went through my program and persevered were all, indoor or outdoor champions one. So I believe that the area is good because of the weather, the climate, and we always have seemed to be able to pull a lot of new young skaters in this area. Unfortunately, we have to do that through the skating rink, and my next goal is to try to do that without a skating rink so that we skip the whole indoor program and go right to outdoor.
Straight into outdoor,
So
okay.
I have a 400-meter track I chartered a club out of, and I'm basically going to see if I can develop inline speed skaters just outdoors, like every other country does.
Okay, if we just pause for a second, I'd just like to bring viewers up to speed. Those not familiar with the sport of inline speed skating, when Rene mentions these Vesmako tracks, Vesmako is a surface coating that they put on bank tracks at inline world championships. There is bank track racing and there's road racing, of course, being on a road circuit. But bank track racing has become very standardized on a 200-meter track with flat banking, and they have this special surface called Vesmako. It's very smooth, it's abrasive, it grips well, and it's very, very fast. The disadvantage, if you could call it that, of having this surface is that any country that doesn't have a track with the Vesmako surface loses out because they're not able to train on it. You're not able to get used to it, and it is one of those things that you do need some familiarity with to know how to skate. So that's just for that. So yeah, sorry for the interruption. Coming back to it. So the regional, yeah, there's a strong regional league in Florida. That's really nice.
Right, and I mean, they had to be good to compete in that league. To
Yeah.
get to the top of that league, they had to be good skaters, and they were.
And yeah, being able to travel to these races and not having to travel too far, because of course, from my experience growing up skating in Australia, you spend a lot of time just training with your own club. If you're lucky, your city has another club, but you don't really get a lot of competition until you go to nationals once a year, and yeah, then you have to travel to another state sometimes. It's a long way. I mean, Australia are also a very spread out country.
Right, and I mean it's a very very big advantage to have a good league and a strong region, so that you can get a lot of competition. Because I mean, if you're training to race, you need a race to train.
Yep.
And
Love that saying.
I keep that intensity at practice, but there's nothing like true competition. I mean, with your adrenaline, with, you know, your nerves, everything that happens,
nothing...
you have to keep putting the skaters in that position in order to help them get better at that. Nobody can teach that. That's experience teaches that.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing makes you push your body harder than being in a race and just needing
to. Right, and then when the coach, and then as a coach, when I see them in competition at that level, that's when I can pick up things that I need to work on when we get back to practice.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, as a coach myself now, like as a skater, when I came and trained with you, I agree. Your program is good. It's fun. That's a really important thing that many programs miss.
Right.
And it definitely wasn't too hard. It was a good level. It was hard work, definitely, but it was not too hard. It didn't risk injuring the skaters. And now,
right. I mean, I think some people think quantity is more important than quality, and that's what people would say. Oh, Erin doesn't train much. Erin should be training more, you know, this and that. And with her busy schedule, she's never been a 3 or 4 day a week inliner. So my thing with her is, though, when she does train, it's with high intensity, and she gets the quality out of it, even if she doesn't have the quantity that others might have. You can do, you know, 100 miles a day at, you know, 65-70%, and you're only going to be able to go 65 or 70%. You have to train at the high intensity that you want to perform at.
Yeah, this reminds me of another one of your great sayings. Practice doesn't make perfect. Only perfect practice makes perfect. Did I get it right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's perfect because, I mean, it just makes sense. I mean, you're going to, especially with these kids on the ice, and it's what I try to tell Joey and Erin about the limited ice time, is that, you know, I said to Erin, maybe just you get out. She goes, it feels like we get on the ice and we're right back off again. You know, we don't do enough on the ice. And I said, yeah, but if you go out there and your technique is sloppy and you keep practicing, you're just going to get better at doing it wrong.
Mm.
And I told her again, remember on this sport for sure, it's perfect practice makes perfect. Once you get tired, stop, rest, and then come back and do as much as you can perfectly again. You know, because it definitely will create muscle memory in the wrong direction if you don't do it correctly.
Yeah.
I've had to break a lot of old habits for people. And I'm sure when they go to ice, that's probably the hardest thing is, for instance, Erin and Joey, who I've taught to run on their toes as fast as they can go and spring up out of the, you know, spring up off their toes. Now they get on the ice and they're like, yeah, we can't run on our toes. No. You have to have your foot flat. You have to start off slowly. You know,
it's a whole different thing.
And on inline, we could go all out, you know, I could push the kids, you know, you gotta go, and on ice it's a controlled power and a controlled strength, and controlling, you know, what you're doing with your blade, so it's definitely technically more difficult to do the ice.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, in this conversation, I can't help but pick up on a lot of these points, you know, perfect practice and all this very technical, like, coaching points. Do you have any formal training in exercise physiology or coaching, or is this just these are things that you've picked up from experience going to Worlds as a coach and, of course, being a skater yourself previously?
Well, I'm a physical
Hello?
I had taken a lot of sports medicine during my physical therapy years, thinking that's what I would want to go into. I mostly felt like I needed a scientific background because I didn't have that, say, like Kalen Dobbins, who, you know, has been a world champion many times over, and now he's coaching, obviously, very successfully.
Yes.
But I didn't have that. I didn't have that to go on. So for me, I felt like I needed the scientific background, and perhaps I could make my programs, you know, fit into that, and that would be better for our sport. At the time, I couldn't find anybody that was, you know, running that type of a program on inline. So I used a lot of ice skating information and Diane Hollum's book of speed skating. You know, I went to that for a lot of things. But definitely, you know, I've not only taken the physical therapy classes, but done a whole lot of research, you know, in exercise physiology as it relates to, you know, squatting in the static position, things that are different to our sport that other people don't have to deal with.
Right. Yeah.
But I've also learned a lot. I mean, as much as I've taught my skaters, each skater that I've had come through, I've learned things from. And obviously, Joey and Brittany being my first world champions, you know, I've learned from them. And I, you know, have learned that instead of always thinking all the skaters should skate alike, make sure you watch what successful ones are doing. And maybe we want to change, you know, or modify what we're doing to match their success.
Oh, nice. Okay. So yeah, it is just this process of continuous learning, not just for the athlete, but also for the coach.
And the same with when Kalen came over, obviously I learned from him. He was a top skater. Alexi, learned things from Bart, throughout the years. Just, you got to watch and see what works for different people. And if something's not working that you're teaching, you might want to change what you're teaching. And also not the one thing always works for every skater.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, people are different. That's something we always have
Absolutely.
To remember. Okay.
Probably the toughest part of coaching is learning that each individual you have to coach a little differently and respond to differently and react to differently.
Yeah.
It's part of coaching is not to think that you can be the same with every athlete, because it's not going to work, and you won't be successful except with one certain kind of athlete if you only coach one certain kind of way.
Yeah, that reminds me of a lot of terrible coaches I've had in the past. Yeah. Okay. So moving along here, we've got Joey, Brittany, Aaron at the Olympic Games. Aaron, of course, a little bit of a surprise, but we're watching very, very carefully here. How do these three athletes differ, in fact? So yeah, I've asked before, like, what makes them champions? What makes them, what's similar about them? What makes them different? What makes each of them unique in their own way?
Well, Brittany and Joey grew up pretty much together skating. While I got a picture of Aaron, and from, I don't know if you've seen it online, in 2002, she still had her artistic skates on, and she came to the World Team Party where we went to Belgium. So those two were in a little bit different situation. At that time, I had a very strong team, a very large team, and a lot of competitive skaters. We were very strong in indoor as well as the outdoor program. I started taking them to outdoor nationals in 1998, and Joey didn't qualify his first year to make the world team. He qualified, they skated freshman and before that, but then when he skated, his first trials was 2001 and he didn't make it. Mm. It was 2002 and then they both made it. And I think the difference is because I was able to take them to international events. I was able to be with them a lot more. Like, as far as I went to all the indoor nationals, I went to all the events with them. And they got, they were used to me being there for them all the time. I think Joey still misses that type of coach, even as an adult. Uh-huh. When he came off the track the other night, he just was like, he looked at me and he goes, they didn't even say anything to me. I go, what do you mean? He goes, the coaches, if I don't win, they don't say anything. And I'm like, but Joey, you're a grown man, you're 32 years old. It's not like when I coached you as a kid and I'm waiting at the end to hug you when you're finished. It's a little different. He goes, yeah, but they could say something. So, I mean, I think there's some frustration. As I thought about it, I'm like, maybe I spoiled them because I was there for everything. Like, I mean, I would rub Joey's legs between races. I was his therapist. I was, his coach. He wrote a reflective essay one time and said, I was his best friend. So that's hard to duplicate when you move to a new sport as an adult.
Yeah.
And you try to start relationships as a coach skater.
Different people, different
it's
culture.
It's not going to be the same as when they grow up with you. Brittany was different because she also played basketball, so she didn't miss much practice. She would come straight from basketball practice to inline practice. Her dad was a coach in high school, and he would make sure that she was able to get to practice, which was great. And she was able to excel at both sports.
Yeah, she was a very good basketball player.
She was a super basketball player. Played 4 years of college basketball, and did real well. If she wouldn't have done ice skating, I think she would have went to Europe to play professional basketball.
Wow.
That was her two choices, I think, at the time she made the decision to come to the ice. But she's always been one of the most mentally tough individuals I've ever had. Joey's always been very physically strong, mm-hmm. and very in shape and very ready for any event physically, but sometimes mentally he could get us a little messed up. Whereas Brittany might have missed some practice and not really be where you think she should be physically, but her mental toughness was enough to pull it out. I'm hoping that's going to show up in the 500. She's a little worried because she says they're a specialist, just for the 500.
Yeah.
And she's a little bit of doubting herself, and I'm like, you know what, I would never be surprised to see Brittany pull off anything because she's just that mentally tough.
Yeah, well, she's gone fifth, fourth, and yeah, maybe now yeah. time for the podium.
Unfortunately, the concussion and the recovery from the concussion was horrible. It was horrible timing, and it was, you know, just horrible for her. I mean, I talked to her one day, and, you know, she's like, it's not even about skating anymore. I just want to be able to go out of my house, you know, and not have a panic attack. And that kind of brought me kind of back to reality as far as, you know, goals in life. It's like sometimes things like that happen, and nothing seems really important except just getting your health back. Mm. Thank God that she had a lot of help doing that, and she was able to recover. And I just feel like if she had maybe a couple of more months, that maybe she could have put it all together and really and been on the podium for both of those other races.
Yeah.
She seems to still be getting better and better. She just hasn't had enough time to get back to the top shape. I mean, she was the top person in that 1,000 for 2 years, I think, on the World Cup. So, I mean, she had the potential to win it. And that's heartbreaking, you know, especially finishing just off the podium when you've worked 8 years to, you know, to get there.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, at the Olympics and every other competition, there's a lot more that aren't on the podium than are. So the Netherlands has been just so, so strong. And I think with them, Erin mentioned this the other night as we're watching the races. She said, you know, they grow up on their ice skates like we grew up on our inlines. You know, so for them, it is a natural thing. It's ice is natural for them, like inlines was natural to us. But not that all the ice skaters do inline. I said, but they, you know, they still cross back and forth. They're not as dominant on inlines as they are ice, though. And maybe that's why we're, you know, my skaters dominated on inlines, but they're not quite to that point on ice where they can just go out and dominate.
Mm.
It's just so competitive out there. And Erin grew up, you know, a little later where I didn't go to as many of the indoor nationals. I was starting to pull back and do more outdoor, but what's also been nice is I never got to be the Team USA coach when I wanted to, when Joey and Brittany were growing up, when I really wanted to do that. And I had to go to the competitions at Worlds and, you know, spectate and have limited access to them. Whereas with Erin, since 2013, I've been to pretty much every international event she's gone to with the USA. We got to do the Olympic Festival in Mexico. We've been to the Pan American Games in Toronto together, the last three world champions in Taiwan and China.
Yeah.
So I feel like I've gotten to be more of, you know, a coach at this level for her where I wasn't with Joey and Brittany. I mean, I was always there and they would come to me and talk to me, mm-hmm. but I just didn't get to be, you know, the one person that was coaching them. So it's been a little bit different. The way they, you know, the way they came up and the way and Erin has come up. Erin's always been pretty independent and has traveled a lot by herself, and she's gone over to Europe on her own and done some of those races where when the other kids were young, I took them, you know, I went with them, where I haven't been able to do that with Erin because I'm working full time.
Mm.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, the similarities are just you know, that drive and, just perseverance. I think that's the one thing that makes a champion more than anything. I mean, you have to stay in it, and so many give up and don't persevere. And you just have to stay dedicated, and you have to, like you said, you have to be having fun.
Yeah.
Joey told me in 2005 in China, he had been sick, and he didn't place in the first race he skated, and he looked at me and he goes, I don't think I want to do this anymore. It's just not fun. And then he went out in the 500 and won it, and then he came back. He goes, like, yeah, it's fun again.
So, oh, nice.
I think for Joey, and that's why he struggles so much with ice, because when he doesn't win, it's not very fun. He is used to being a winner, and, I mean, they wouldn't be Olympians if they didn't have that desire and that, you know, the strong opposition to losing. That's what makes you that's what makes you a champion, is just not wanting to lose.
Yeah, that's probably one of maybe the most difficult things about being an elite athlete is that you have these two very, very competing, very strong parts of your psyche. On the one hand, you hate losing. I mean, I've seen Bart after he's lost a race. You just don't really want to get near him.
Bart's just like that, too.
Yeah. But on the other hand, of course, you just want to keep doing it. You want to keep persevering. You want to perfect everything. You've got to just go and go and go. And yeah, these are always at odds because at the highest level, you lose a lot more often than you win. Even when you're
absolutely
good.
Absolutely. And that's what Brittany posted on her, you know, she did a tweet that said, you know, heartbroken. It might be, my fourth might make you heartbroken, but it also keeps you hungry. You know, yeah. She's not done. She's got, you know, two more chances at a medal, and she's going to go out there in the, you know, in the 500 and the team pursuit and do the best she can to try to get one. And, I mean, that's what you come here for. And I'm hoping Joey does the same. He's got the 1,000, the mass start and the team pursuit yet to skate. And I still have a lot of confidence in the mass start. It's just so much like inline.
Yeah.
And I still feel like our kids, you know, part of their, all of the inliners, I mean, part of our strength is the strategy and the ability to race and move around in the pack and do things that you don't ever have to do in a time trial on ice.
Yeah, I mean, with the mass start for the inline skaters doing ice, that is something that feels natural to us.
Absolutely.
In the way that ice skating feels natural to people who grew up on ice skates. And
right.
you can see that.
And I think you're going to see, I think you're going to see some inliners in the top 10 on, you know, the ladies and the men's side.
Oh, I'm sure.
I think you'll see them come up there and do well. I know Alexi's pretty fired up. He's ready for that race.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was training in Berlin before, and he was, yeah, it looked like he was definitely preparing quite specifically for the mass start.
Yeah.
No, it'll, that's going to be so exciting to watch.
Very, I know, I can't wait.
Very much looking forward to that.
I was first looking to try to cut some days off my trip just because of the expense. It's been, I mean, amazingly unaffordable. So I was going to cut some days off. I'm like, nope, mass start is the last day. That's not the race I'm going to miss.
Yeah.
So if I come all the way over here, I want to see that race.
Hmm. And, yeah, interesting, because later tonight you're going to see some short track racing. Short track, also pack style racing.
Right.
Strange, we don't see too many inliners getting into that. I know Jordan Malone did very well.
Yeah, and you have still have Jessica Corman there. Yes. But Brittany and I went to the Olympics back in 2002 in Salt Lake together. She was 12.
Oh.
And we saw Apollo win his gold, Derek Parra win his gold, and Jennifer Rodriguez that got a bronze. Chris Whitty also got a medal.
Oh, yeah, she did.
And watching the two, I was like, okay, I really think, you know, we can go to short track, should be a pretty easy, you know, transition. And we actually started a short track team in 2002 along with Doug DuBois, who's still coaching that team in Kissimmee. I went to a coach's clinic up in Minnesota. I was ready to, you know, get started with it. Well, and then with short track, for one, it's just so expensive for us. It's like $300 an hour for ice, whereas we pay $45 a month to skate inline. So that was a detriment. And then we had to buy the pads, and we did all that, and the kids, you know, they were liking it, but I think the similarity is not as much, because I mean, you know, they pick up that left foot and they skate on the right, and I mean, basically I teach my kids to lean in on the left leg.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I think, you know, the body mechanics is different. And then I think on that short track, unlike inlines, I think you have to be pretty small. It seems like the larger, you know, the taller and bulkier you are, the less able you are to go around that track. I think maybe just with the G-forces and stuff that it matters a lot more for the weight, whereas long track seems to transition much better from outdoor over to long track, you know, just like as we skate, you know, on the bank track or especially the 400-meter track, the road circuit would be much more similar to the, you know, to the long track ice. And it's also, to me, short track was a little scary, only because it's so easy to get out of a race. And then I think it's because I think it was 2010, maybe before that, there was an Australian who won the short track. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that was in 2002. Stephen Bradbury in the 1,000 meters, where everyone fell.
Everyone fell when he'd come across the gold medal, and I was like, eh, I think we'll do long track. I don't know.
It's probably the most famous gold medal ever. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's gold, and whatever you got it is fine. But like I said, I got a little worried then. Joey also got hurt a little bit early on the short track.
Oh.
Bruised a kidney and had an amnesia for a couple hours. So I think it just kind of scared me.
Yeah.
And then we were driving an hour and a half there and an hour and a half back, again, an hour of ice time. So we just decided that our Saturdays could be better spent, you know, and we started just staying home and doing that. We didn't, I think maybe 6 or 8 months we went over to the short track, and everybody was just like, we really like inlines better, we just want to stay on inlines. So they were still young and had plenty of time, so I didn't push it. And of course, after 2002, once they made the world team and started, you know, winning at Worlds, they didn't really want to do anything else at the time. Once they had reached their goals on inline, this is when they started thinking about the Olympics.
Right. Okay. Yeah, interesting those stories about short track. There's a funny little aside about Stephen Bradbury's gold medal. That was his third Olympics, and in his previous two Olympics, he had actually been floating around the top 10 in the short track world for a long time, but never winning anything. So he had some really bad crashes too. He had a crash where he lost a liter of blood. He had a crash where he broke some neck vertebrae. He had this huge brace on. It was pretty scary. And until he won that world that gold medal, he was probably the unluckiest short tracker in the history of the sport. And well, yeah, law of averages came back to.
He kind of deserved a break, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I've met him. He's a nice guy. So, yeah, I want to talk a little bit now about sport development in kind of a wider perspective, because you know, like you've spoken a lot about your experiences, you know, inlining and then trying to go to ice, short track being very expensive, things being in different locations. That's probably also a challenge. Like you're saying, it would be nice to be able to do both at the same time. How are the support structures in the US with inline, with ice? Do they cooperate? And what I'm really getting at here is we look at a country that's very successful, for example, the Netherlands. They have short track, they have long track, they have now very good inline skaters. And those, all the sports seem to work together fairly well, and the structures seem to be well organized. Can you speak a little bit to how things are organized in the States?
Yeah, I think it used to be more of a problem, like back, you know, the last Olympics. But I think in the last 4 years, and especially in the last year, there's some good things happening. The U.S. Speed Skating has reached out to USA Roller Sports,
nice,
to come up with a combined membership and to try to have some competitions that all skaters would go to, and to try to work more on a development program so that we didn't lose them from one sport to get them to go to the other. I think this is super important. I'm on the board of directors for USA Roller Sports, and I don't want to lose our top skaters, but at the same time, I feel like the kids are going to go over whether we let them. I mean, we can't keep them from going over. They're going to switch to ice just for the financial reasons, and of course, in pursuit of that Olympic dream. So we could either work with U.S. Speed Skating, you know, and try to do something mutually beneficial, or we can just sit back and kind of watch the skaters grow, you know, go. I would actually like to talk to Desley some while I'm here. I haven't gotten to see her personally yet, but I was thinking of asking her some of those same questions, like how does it work in the Netherlands? You know, how can we, you know, change our program so that we can kind of model them as far as doing both? Because right now, like I said, there's still some coaches out there that don't want their kids to go to ice because they're afraid they're going to lose them. And there's ice coaches that think once they get on ice, they shouldn't go back to inlines.
Yep.
But I think the majority of folks now in both organizations realize that the inline is good for ice, and that the kids that are coming over from inline are super strong, and maybe that we need to train everybody on inlines a certain part of the season. Now, ideally, inline would get in the Olympics, and skaters could actually skate the Olympics every 2 years if they wanted to do both, you know, or the skaters who wanted to stick to one could stay in the sport that they loved to begin with and not have to switch. My skaters didn't go to ice because they loved ice skating. They went to the ice because they wanted an Olympic medal. They would have never left inline had it been an Olympic sport.
That is pretty interesting. Actually, I can answer at least one of those questions. In the Netherlands, what happened was you used to have the KNSB, who is in charge of the ice, and you had SBN, the Skilabon Nederland, who handled the inline. I think it was just after the Vancouver Olympics, the KNSB basically swallowed the SBN, and SBN ceased to exist. So it all came under one umbrella organization.
That's what the, you know, we're thinking with U.S. speed skating, because, you know, as Chris the guy that I'm working with, Chris Needham, he said, you know, skaters are skaters. Skating is skating. You know, we need to work together just to get more skaters, because neither organization has a lot of membership. Both need to grow. Mm-hmm. So with one helping the other is a much better option than, you know, one being detrimental to the other.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, just, I guess, be a little bit careful when that happens, because when it happened in the Netherlands, initially there was a bit of chaos. People didn't quite know what their responsibilities were. A lot of people lost their jobs quite unexpectedly, but things have evened out now, of course, and stuff is better.
Yeah. I'm sure there would be growing pains for sure, but sometimes you got to go through some of that to make things better. Obviously, something's working in the Netherlands with their ice program, because they're just so dominant. To be this dominant at an Olympic level is just amazing. It's like the Colombians on inlines.
Yeah. Yeah, and when there, I mean, it's a very mature sport, and when there are so many countries with very good skaters, and still the Dutch managed to, I think, only one event they haven't won a gold medal. And it was won by a Dutch-born skater.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Ted Jan Bloemen, who switched to Canada. But no, he skated very well. So, yeah, that's interesting. U.S. speed skating, I've also heard, coming under a little bit of criticism for the way they organize their funding. I mean, I know this is a little bit out of, like, your purview, but and actually many sports federations around the world organize in a very top-down kind of way. Most of the funding goes to a very small number of athletes at the top, and the large base that's below them doesn't get a lot of support. Whereas there are other countries, Denmark, for example, which are the polar opposite of that. Almost all of the funding goes to very low-level, community-level sports, the clubs, and very, very little funding actually goes to top-level athletes. I mean, some obviously does, so they go to the Olympics. But what do you think about that? Do you think there is a right way?
I would feel that you have to put some money into the developmental programs. Mm-hmm. If not, you're not going to have any of those elite athletes coming up, so you won't have anything to spend your money on if you don't support the grassroots level. I've heard some rumors. I've seen some negative comments, both from some of my former skaters that are still in Salt Lake, that feel like it's kind of elitist. Like, you know, the top skaters do get, you know, the privileges and that. But I mean, I kind of looked at it as it's the Olympics, and you have to kind of focus on the top, or, you know, that, I mean, that's what you're there for, I think, also. Mm-hmm. So I think some of it is kind of sour grapes that, you know, people that haven't gotten to that level. But at the same time, you have, like I said, you have to still keep working on that next level down. If not, you're not going to be able to promote anybody coming up to your Olympic level. So it's kind of hard for me because my kids are at the top. I have no idea what funding they get. I don't ever ask my kids about that kind of stuff. Uh-huh. And I don't know the facts from U.S. speed skating, so I just don't want to say anything, you know, more than that.
Sure. No, completely.
I mean, in our sport, I know that our kids pay their own way to go to Worlds, and that's bad enough.
Yeah, that's hard. Yeah, especially if Worlds are a long way away, and they usually are, because I don't think there's been a Worlds in North America for... Oh,
my goodness. So long.
Definitely not as long as I've been skating competitively.
Right. No, that's because we wouldn't have any spectators, because people don't even know what the sport is.
Yeah, there
every
is...
4 years we get some kudos. You know, every 4 years people hear about inline skating, you know, getting people to the Olympics. But it seems like once the Olympics are over, that goes away, and then we're back to square one.
Yeah, most countries apart from the Netherlands, that also happens in the ice skating world.
Right.
Yeah, that's definitely a thing. Okay. Now that's most of what I wanted to talk about. Do you have any questions for me, I guess? I mean,
how is it to be a daddy?
Oh my. it's wonderful. It really is. I can unequivocally say it is the best. It's the best thing ever.
I know. Wait till you're a grandparent. I thought that too, and then I became a grandparent. I'm like, "Oh, this is even better."
Yeah. But I'd be lying if I said it wasn't hard. It's very difficult. I don't get a lot of sleep. I do get more sleep than my partner because I'm very good at falling asleep quite quickly. She takes much longer. And so when you're sleeping in kind of these 2 hour, 3 hour bursts, that that time to fall asleep becomes a significant part of your total sleep time. But watching this little guy grow up and develop and learn how to use his hands, all these little things. It's a really beautiful thing. I'm not sure if he's going to skate or not. I don't know if he's going to want to or whether I would encourage it. He's probably going to want to do it because he's going to eventually come and see me coach and see me skate and want to do what daddy does. But it's...
Yeah, I have mixed emotions with my granddaughter. I mean, she's skating. She's skated a couple outdoor nationals. She's got a few medals here and there. I've taken her to the ice skating. She's got a pair of ice skates. Uh-oh. But I don't know. I watched the USA-Canada women's hockey the other night, and I decided I really like to play hockey. That was super fun. Those girls are tough.
Yeah, they really are.
It was really interesting. So I was like, I think I'm going to encourage her to play a little ice hockey. It'll make her more aggressive if she does want to skate. But, She skates maybe once a week, once every 2 weeks. So she's just 7. So I'm kind of hoping she'll explore a lot of other sports before she makes up her mind anyway.
Yeah. And that's a healthy thing too. It's good for their development to try lots of different things.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, even some of these top guys, I think I heard an interview once with Roger Federer, and he said when he was young, he did a lot of different sports. He did a lot of badminton, and that actually helped him a lot with his tennis. There's a lot of similar stories. Yeah, I guess that's an interesting test. Is you know, you're a coach and you're like, oh yeah, this sport, and you got to do things like this. And then you have a kid, and it's like, do you want them to be in your sport? And you're suddenly faced with this like, oh, I don't know.
And then if they're in another sport, you got to remember to try to be that parent that you want our skaters' parents to be, and yeah, that's hard too.
Definitely. Yeah, my experience with skating parents has so far been pretty good. I've not had too many crazy ones or any particularly angry ones, but
that's okay. Your time will come.
Yeah, I've heard some insane stories.
You're the honeymoon phase.
especially Dez, because I mean Holland skating is such a big deal. Some of the skating parents there are nuts. They're
intense,
certifiable.
Yeah. But when I was there in 07, I mean, there was a huge difference in the parents there than the parents in the U.S., though. I mean, I feel like they were so much better. And I said, the good thing when I coached in Belgium and the Holland kid, that like, even if the parents said something bad about me, I couldn't understand it, so I didn't care. Because in the U.S., it gets back to me, you know?
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty funny. Wow. So,
But I feel like I was, I mean, I felt... I got a lot of respect, and I still do, from the parents over in Europe that I helped, you know, with the kids that I help, the Taz family.
Oh yeah.
And you know,
yes, and Sam, Yora, doing very well.
And all Tim Seabit, all those guys. I mean,
Tim's a great kid.
Really, yeah. I really love when I get to see them at Worlds and different places. And you know, Sandrine told me one time when she first won her first medal, she goes, "You're the first person that told me I could be a world champion, and I believed you." I'm like, that's awesome. Aww. You know, and that's what gave her belief to do it, that's amazing. But back in 07, I was trying to fight for them just to get to skate cadet at the Europeans for free, and they wouldn't even let them. I'm like, how do you not let them skate? It's, you know, a couple hours away. Let them skate the Europeans. No, the girls aren't good enough. And I'm like, well, those are going to be your future champions right there. And that was when Sandrine and Nymph and Steen and all those girls were growing up. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, I bet they feel silly now. It's like, oh, yeah, Sandrine's doing rather well. Yes.
Yeah, she's quite a competitor.
Hmm. Okay. Wow. Well, yeah, this has been fun. When am I going to see you again?
I don't know. Are you going to be at Worlds?
Worlds next. Well, this year. Where is it this year?
Holland.
You know, I think I'm going to come along and watch. You know, I'm gonna.
Oh, good! I get to maybe meet the baby.
Yeah. Bring the family and just you know, enjoy a skating event rather than stress the hell out, looking out for your skaters and going to these meetings and yelling at officials.
I'm going to be in that same capacity. I'm not the official coach because I came here. I couldn't take all that time off. Uh-huh. So if anything, I'll just be a USARS delegate. Either that or nothing. Or maybe I'll get a Holland credential. I don't really care. But if yeah. your guest doesn't want to send me as a delegate. But I'm just going to be there to have fun. I'm like, I'm not going to a place where Amsterdam is located and people tell me what I can and can't do. So yeah. I'm going to go over and have a good time.
Yeah, no, I think I might... I'll see if I can pick up a press pass, actually, because
press would be perfect. You can go more places than anybody with a press pass.
Yeah, those are fun. You get to walk around a lot, and I'll take my camera, take some nice photos for the skaters, because often the skaters don't get good photos of themselves, although these days it's a lot better. Yeah, no, okay, yeah, I might see you in Holland.
Yeah, that would be fun.
Definitely.
I'm supposed to meet Alexi's son. Ooh. When he wakes up, the other night he was sleeping, so I didn't get to meet him yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, little Alexi. Yeah.
I know. Can you imagine?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that we're dads now. Oh, my God.
I know. For me, especially, I'm getting really old. All you guys that were young'uns or having young'uns. I mean, I've had people now bring their kids to my rink that I coach their parents. It's like, that makes you really feel old.
Oh. But enjoy it. Savor it. It's a wonderful thing. And short track tonight, I think the ladies 1500 final is the big thing at the end. That's it's short track is a lot of fun to watch. I would say it's more fun to watch than long track if I'm honest.
But,
yeah, as an athlete, long track's nice. All right.
I just got my ticket dropped off for a short track.
Nice.
Make sure I have one of those.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and yeah, the team pursuits over the next few days, and yeah, we're almost at the end. It's almost a little sad.
Yeah, no ending until we get a medal. We can't end it. We gotta keep going until we get a medal.
Well, I think the mass starts a good chance. The team pursuit,
yeah,
even
I think
like
so.
All sorts of things can happen in the team pursuit. I'm really rooting for New Zealand. In fact, I think they're gonna do very well.
Yeah, Shane didn't skate any other distances though, did he?
No, he was on the list for the 10K, but he withdrew. Uh-huh. So I think they're really putting all their eggs in the team pursuit there.
To the team pursuit. That'd be cool.
They've got a very good
Peter
chance.
Michaels looked good.
Oh,
Peter looked really good.
Goodness, his 5K.
Livio did a good job. It's so fun to see all the inliners, and I'm getting a lot of weird looks because I'm screaming for like people from all different countries, and I guess that's not really appropriate. I was yelling for Bart, I guess, when he skated against Shawnee. But I don't know Shawnee, and I know Bart. You know, it's like it's just hard for me.
Yeah. No, I wouldn't.
It's not anti-American. It's just pro inliners.
It's pro your friends. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. I love these guys.
Yeah. No. I mean.
I haven't gotten to see Kaylin. I'm supposed to go have lunch or something with Yella tomorrow, but I want to see Kaylin as well, just to talk to him a little bit about the whole transition stuff.
Yeah.
See how they're doing.
Yeah, transition programs. Yeah, I think Kaylin's a good one to talk to. Ryan Shimabukuro. Des,
Ryan,
of course.
Job with my kids. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I'm very, very interested, of course, in this area of inline to ice, because all the ice skaters I coach are former inliners, or still current inliners, in fact.
So you're coaching inline or ice?
Ice primarily.
Oh, cool.
I still write programs for a few inliners, but I don't.
And you live in Berlin?
And I live in Berlin, and I coach the Danish junior team.
Okay.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense for an Australian living in Berlin to coach Danish ice skaters. Yeah.
Hey, I was over there in Belgium. They never had a female or a foreigner for a coach. So.
Oh, wow.
I changed the world.
Yeah, but I mean, international sport, that's what you get. And it's great. It, you know, all the different perspectives, all the different cultures coming together. I think like that's part of the beauty of high-level sport.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite things about it.
Oh, it was great talking to you, Daniel. Good to hear from you again.
Yeah, same. And goodness, I really should catch up with people more. Now, this was a lot of fun. And I'll do a little write-up on my website. The audio file will be there. If I have time, I might even transcribe it. But that is a time-consuming thing. That may not happen till after the Olympics. But it'll definitely be available, like, freely for people who want to listen. Okay.
Alrighty.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Sorry. All right. Thanks, Daniel.
All right. Have a good
one.
I'll
see you soon.
Yep.
Bye. Bye-bye.
That was Rene Hildebrand, a coach from Ocala, Florida, who coached, as you heard, Brittany Bowe, Joey Mantia, and Aaron Jackson. All three of them will be skating or have skated for the U.S. speed skating team. And this is Daniel Yao reporting on the Pyeongchang 2018 Olympic Winter Games. Yeah, signing off. This will be available on the website when I get around to writing it up. Thanks very much for listening, guys, and we'll see you tomorrow at the a bit later, 8 p.m. Korean time, 12 noon Berlin time, 11 GMT, and hopefully that's enough information for you guys to figure out what time to tune in and so on. All right. Have a good one.